Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch. This is Scorebook Live Today, a podcast about high school sports in the state of Washington. I'm Andy Bueller, Scorebook Live sports reporter in Washington, and it's January 3rd. It's a new decade, but we're going to take a quick look at the last couple weeks at the top of the podcast. I've got on the line the usual suspects, Dan Dickow, Scorebook Live analyst in Spokane, Todd Millis, Scorebook Live senior reporter in Washington. Happy New Year, guys.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you guys as well. 2019 went out with a bang with a lot of really good performances by not only players but teams from the state of Washington at holiday tournaments across not just the West Coast but even the country.
Yeah, this is what I love about basketball, Dan, is you never really know. We can prognosticate in the preseason. And there's some real surprise teams on both boys and girls side. I'm glad we're going to get into that today.
No question. Let's just jump into it. The winners of Christmas tournament season. Like you guys just said, a few teams put some really strong showings forward, locally in Washington, and then around the country, around the West Coast in particular. Just jumping into it, I'll start with the team that I covered last week. Had a chance to see them play a few nights in a row, and that's Eastside Catholic. They came down and played in the Les Schwab Invitational, the premier Christmas tournament in the Pacific Northwest that consistently draws some of the nation's top high school basketball programs. And I'll say it, I mean, they were a little bit bummed out. Weren't exactly thrilled to get a national power like Bishop Gorman in the second round, but they took care of business. I mean, that was as impressive of a win as we saw over the last couple weeks. Eastside Catholic really kind of punched Bishop Gorman in the mouth from the get-go. JT Tumalau off the bench, still kind of getting the football legs out from under him, but was an immediate impact and really, really strong for the Crusaders. They went on to beat a 6A runner-up from last year in Oregon, Jefferson, a team that has players that will suit up for college, big-time college teams at some point in the next couple of years, throttled Jefferson, and then eventually lost a close one to modern day in the finals. So Eastside Catholic finishes runner-up, didn't win the tournament, but a really strong showing. And, not many folks there expected to see them in the finals. It's a team that going in we had elevated in our all-class boys top 25 to number one. They did nothing to drop themselves. They backed that up with, again, an impressive showing, and showed that they can do it in a lot of different ways. JT, like I mentioned, was really strong throughout the whole tournament until modern day was able to kind of contain him a little bit more with their size down low. But Nolan Hickman, point guard, guy who for a couple years has been doing it and his game continues to grow. He showed an ability to score that was really impressive to me. I mean, he kind of controlled the game well and just could do it in a lot of different ways. Shane Noel was the lone representative on the all-tournament team from Eastside Catholic, and, just a really, really athletic junior and a guy who, is getting a ton of looks at the Division I level. So Eastside Catholic kicks off kind of our Christmas winners. I'm not sure you guys haven't seen them this year, but did it surprise you that they made it to the finals of this kind of premier tournament?
Absolutely not. I think for people in the know, basketball in the state of Washington is very good. Now, you know, a couple of the teams that you mentioned, Bishop Gorman, obviously, is a national power, and they have been for quite some time out of Las Vegas. They produced tons of college players. Somebody here that has Northwest ties now, Zach Collins, went to Gonzaga for a year. Now with the Blazers, went to
he was courtside. He was courtside for the Gorman Eastside Catholic game.
Yeah, he was actually at the Gonzaga game at University of Portland as well. So it's good to see him out, getting out and following some different teams that he's got connections with. But you know, they beat them. They take care of Jefferson, who traditionally has been one of the best teams in Oregon for the last however many years. And then you go up against a really good team in the finals, where they couldn't quite get over the hump. But, you know, nationally, I think people are starting to really see just how good players in the state of Washington are, but also how good the programs are. Because, you know, with Scorebook Live, some of the different things that I've done across the country the last couple of years, going to coaches' clinics as well as talking to coaches at the college level, they feel as though, you know, the high school coaches in the state of Washington collectively are as good as any other part of the country.
You know, guys, we've been asking this question since day one of basketball. Can somebody go chase down O'Day? I think we finally got some clarity on that question. I think this is the team. If somebody's going to go take O'Day's 3A state championship this year, this is the number one team on the list. You look at their pieces. They have Noel, who's he can defend anybody on the wing. He's long arm. He's a great athlete. Obviously, the point guard we talked about, a guy that can run the show, control tempo. But, you know, you talked about JT, and Dan and I saw this summer. I one of the more remarkable things I saw going to the WIPCA thing was JT showing up. He's right in the middle of 7-on-7 football season, and he puts on a pair of basketball sneakers and is going against future Division I post players. And, the combination of power and footwork at his size, he's probably an undersized 4 or 5 at 6'5", but his footwork and the way he can get to the basket, and he's just an really underrated big athlete. I'm going to ask Paulo this. I'm going to watch O'Day Beach tonight. I'm going to ask Paulo if this is the guy that presents him the biggest challenge in the state of Washington to guard on both ends of the floor. Because that would be my guess because of some of the unique challenges, and he's such a good athlete in different sports. I think they have the pieces to really give O'Day some issues. They beat O'Day last year, and then obviously the Irish beat them in the state semifinals and went on to win the championship. But I think we found the team that that I feel comfortable with saying that if somebody's going to beat O'Day in 3A, this is the team I think that should be at the top of the list.
Well, to stay on the JT kind of topic, you know, what I saw this summer outside of the things that you mentioned is just the competitiveness. You know, he seems to me as a guy that doesn't go to basketball workouts and do all these funky cone drills and, touch this sideline, kind of do this move and whatnot. He seems to just want to go out there and compete. And unfortunately, sometimes that is missing in youth sports these days, but it's awesome to see him bring it in that way.
And he was doing it in so many different ways. He extended out and hit a few threes. He led Eastside in scoring two of the games. He was a bruiser down low, great at the free throw line. And there was this, I tweeted this out when it happened, but there was this just, I think it was against Jefferson, where he got a rebound and he went to take the ball in transition on the break. And he just like behind the back crossed up a guard at Jefferson. And I'm just sitting there on the sideline going, this is the defensive lineman I'm looking at, right? The guy who just did that. And it's like, I mean, it feels like the game comes naturally to him. And, this is a guy who's not even in the starting lineup because he's not done with football stuff. He still has a top 100 event to go to. here in the next month. And Brent Merritt, head coach at Eastside Catholic, said that he won't start him until he's all done. So that'll be, you know, midway through league play. So the best of JT may be yet to come. He might be a guy who we'll be talking about again and again on this very podcast. So Eastside Catholic, a clear winner out of the state, as a runner-up in the Les Schwab Invitational. But an actual winner in a tournament, we'll move on. The Surf and Slam in San Diego, Union comes away as the tournament champions. The Titans remain the top 4A team in the state of Washington right now, especially out in the heels of Federal Way losing now as we record this last night, Thursday, the Skyview. But Union puts together a really impressive showing down in San Diego and, sees contributions from not just their top guy, Tanner Toulson, but Brad Lackey, a guard who went off for 11 threes, 40 points in one of those games. So impressive showing from Union. I don't know if you guys were able to kind of pick up any notes from that game. But is there anything that stands out about Union just continuing to really run through its schedule?
Well, I think what you're seeing is a program that kind of has, you hear it all the time at the college level, built to last and just replace guys. I mean, a couple of years ago, they won a state title. Last year, people thought, hey, they might be down a little bit. No, they had a pretty darn good year. Same thing this year. A lot of people were like, hey, you know what? Toulson's pretty good. I like Lackey. But they haven't missed a beat. And as you mentioned, they're undefeated. You know, I have actually made the comment on a number of occasions when I've talked to coaches on the podcast is I don't think the backcourt combo of Lackey and Toulson gets enough credit. Everybody talks about Eastside Catholic's backcourt. Everybody talks about Mount Si's backcourt, and rightfully so, as maybe being the best in the state. But I think you could have a case to be said for Union, and simply because, you know, both Toulson, Lackey, they can handle the ball a little bit to play the point. They can both play off the ball and be shooters. So they're very versatile, and you can kind of mix and match it. And I think that's the best way to play this day and age of basketball, is have two multi-talented, versatile, skilled ball handlers on the floor who can make plays off the bounce or off the catch.
You know, I saw them play North Kitsap at the Highline Shootout right before Christmas. And the thing that stands out about them is their tempo. They're the fastest team I've seen, and it's not even close here in 2019-20. And it's hard for teams to stay in front of them. They played a North Kitsap team that's not slow.
That's a good North Kitsap team, albeit they were losing their best player, but
yeah. And Andy's seen this with other teams in 4A. I just, you know, when they get on the break, they're scary. And you talked about Lackey, the way he kind of sees the floor and controls it. And, you know, Tanner had, 14, 15 points in the first quarter, hits a fall away three with a hand in his face at the buzzer. He can do so many things. They're not selfish. They're deep. They understand their roles. You know, North Kitsap did some things to slow them down with some zone stuff in the second half. And I talking to North Kitsap, their coaching staff, if they have a vulnerability is they're not real big. A post player that can rebound and do some damage in the inside might have some success against Union, but they're just 32 minutes of hell on wheels, to be honest with you. It's impressive. And they have a go-to guy when they need a bucket in Tanner. So I think they've sort of clearly established themselves with some big wins, Mount Si, North Kitsap, obviously going down to San Diego and winning. They've clearly established themselves as the team to beat in 4A. Right now, I think the question we need to ask is, can somebody stay within 10 points of these guys? Because nobody's done it.
32 minutes of hell on wheels. I think you just created a T-shirt for the Union fans and students. That's a good one. But no, you're exactly right, Todd. I completely agree with that. And a team that they could very well run into in the Bi District is another team and another one of our winners from the Christmas season, a team that you saw take care of business at the T-Town Throwdown. That's Federal Way. What's been your impression of Federal Way these past couple weeks, Todd?
It's just weird to watch them. It's such a different Federal Way team, and I know Dan's used to some of the great Federal Way teams over the years with the plethora of Division One guys. You know, they had two guys like that last year with Jaden McDaniels, Tari Eason. This is such a different team. And the two things that I've noticed with them, and then, you know, the Yada Reed plays 10 guys, and they all do kind of different things. They're, you know, they don't really have a Swiss Army knife type player that can do it all. I'd kind of say that, you know, Bradley Graham is kind of the closest guy that can do a little bit of everything on both ends of the floor, but they're doing it differently. They're putting their guys in positions to do their roles and do it well. You know, they can play with tempo. They played a little zone, which I've never seen from Federal Way in the past. They've got guys who can shoot it. They've got a lot of seniors. They've got three ninth graders that are good. You know, I've watched this team two or three times now, and they're starting to grow on me a little more than when I saw them early. It's going to be interesting to see how they continue to evolve and what Yada does with that rotation heading into February and then the postseason. You know, they beat Puyallup, against that really good zone that Scott Campbell runs. And then obviously they defeated one of the better teams in 3A in Wilson, the host school in the championship. And played with a lot of poise. I was really impressed with how much poise they play and how hard they play for Yada, given that they have, you know, a fair amount of new pieces.
Yeah, no question. No question. Moving right on, Mount Si goes down to the Max Preps Classic, I believe it's called, and puts a showing on down there. Had some standout performances from Tyler Patterson. Head coach Jason Griffith, you exchanged some messages with him, Dan. What's his kind of mindset coming off this tournament? Are they pleased with how they played down there?
Yeah, they were. They played some really good teams, teams that are maybe not at Bishop Gorman of Las Vegas's level, but very good. State tournament title contenders, I believe, in Arizona, and another really good team in California that they played. But, you know, he told me that Tyler Patterson won MVP of the tournament, and he surprised and turned a lot of heads. Josh Gershon, who is one of the, you know, premier kind of talent evaluators on the West Coast, talked to Jason Griffith after the game and couldn't believe that Montana State in the Big Sky was able to get Tyler Patterson. He felt that he was a Pac-12 level type athlete and player after seeing him. So I think it shows you just how good Mount Si can be when they begin to click. Obviously, they've had a little bit of a rough stretch to start the season, but now they're really starting to turn things on.
No question. And Patterson surpassed 1,000 career points, so congrats to him. That's quite the mark, and shows you know, what a career it's been for him at Mount Si. So if we missed anyone, drop us a note. Always on Twitter in our comment section, on Facebook. Mount Spokane just won its first game in the Les Schwab ancillary tournament, the 8, last night, Thursday night as we're recording this. And I'm going to go see him play Tigard tonight, a team in Oregon that's typically pretty good. So I honestly expect Mount Si to at least make the finals, if not win this tournament. Sorry. Mount Spokane to put a strong showing at this tournament and really kind of assert itself. Tyson Degenhart continues to impress, and he'll certainly have an audience of scouts and then some at Liberty High School outside of Portland to do so. But does that wrap it up? Did I miss anyone?
Well, I'd like to ask a question.
Yeah.
Are we – you know, O'Day goes to the Palms tournament in Florida. They go 1-2. Anybody concerned about O'Day 1-2 at their big out-of-state showcase?
You know, I'm not. And I think the reason why is, you know, Paulo Banchero got rave reviews and how he played back there. You know, for a high school kid to travel, you know, 3,000 miles or so, and then be ready to play in 24 hours is interesting. You know, at the NBA level, you're used to it. At the college level, many times you see guys struggle at it. The high school level, you know, that's very difficult to do. So I wouldn't read too much into it. I wouldn't look too much into it. I think it's going to be neck and neck at the 3A between, you know, O'Day and Eastside Catholic, as we mentioned. Garfield's an interesting team as well. Tari Eason had a really nice tournament in Hawaii. I believe that one was right before Christmas. And we'll see how Brandon Roy gets those guys trending once league play starts.
By the way, Dan, we didn't promote this at the top, but I continue to enjoy the release of your Elite 11 high school basketball players in the state, your video series breakdown on scorebooklive.com/Washington. That's been great. It's been awesome to see how you rank those 11 players, and I've enjoyed how we packaged it as well. So you know, for the listeners out there, keep your eyes glued to the site, to social media, as those continue to be unraveled.
No, I appreciate that. And it's been a fun project to put together. You know, I talked to a ton of high school coaches, AAU guys across the state. And I know there's going to be some pushback on a couple guys and where they were placed. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you're one of the 11 best players to start this high school season. You can't complain, or you shouldn't complain. And if you do, you need to take a look at the mirror, or whoever is making those complaints needs to take a look in the mirror, because all 11 of those guys are going to play college basketball at a pretty high level.
No question. Todd, you were able to catch the top girls basketball tournament in the state over the Christmas holiday. You went up to Glacier Peak, saw a bunch of teams, a bunch of really good teams, and no, undoubtedly took a lot of notes, more than what you published, the litany of copy you published on scorebooklive.com/Washington. What impressed you the most about that tournament, and who walked away, kind of on your mind, a team that maybe, you know, going in you were, unsure of, or and came away with a really good impression of?
Well, I mean, the team that won it, I think, was that was the surprise finish. Beamer upends number one Kentridge in the finals, and pretty handily. I got a chance to see Beamer the first day. They played Lincoln. I know Leah Alexander, the younger daughter of Coach Corey Alexander, is the senior, leads that team. They play with a lot of a tempo. What I kind of came away with watching them is, and I've watched their good teams, the teams that lost to Lindsay Stockton and those, and that really good Gonzaga prep team a few years ago in the state semifinals. What I came away impressed with is the confidence that this team plays with, much like those Beamer teams of, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. Am I ready to put Beamer as a top five, top 16 yet? You know, I gotta see more. But they played Bethel tough, one of the better teams in 3A, and like I said, they upset Kent Ridge girls with Jordan Jenkins, a USC signee, in the finals. Now, you know, you look at the brackets in that tournament, the lower half all had Mount Spokane, they had Glacier Peak, they had Eastlake, defending 4A state champion, they had Woodinville. So those teams were playing tough games all the way through. Beamer came out of that top half, beat Lincoln, beat Curtis, and then obviously beat Woodinville in the beat Kent Ridge in the finals. But as an overall impression about where girls basketball is, I continue to be impressed, and Dan can probably echo this from his end. I continue to be impressed with the evolution of girls basketball in the state of Washington and the depth. And we're seeing this, especially in the 4A level. I'm not exaggerating this when I say this. I think there are 10 or 12 teams that can be factors come February and March for a state championship. I don't think there is one 4A team that's unbeatable. I don't think there's a team in 3A that's unbeatable. And I think that's a tribute to what's going on with player development, the coaching. I've just been so impressed getting to, you know, I've probably been to 10 or 12 girls basketball games here since football season ended, and I just continue to be so impressed with the depth of really good talent and really good basketball being played at the girls level or on the girls side. And I think that top of the Peak tournament should sort of showcase that in a nutshell. A team like Beamer, who's kind of an outside top 10 team, comes through the bracket and handles business and beats the number one team in the state. I'd like to hear some of your guys' thoughts about just, you know, where the girls' game has been and where it's going. It's been fantastic to see.
This type of depth sure makes our job fun and the fans' job fun. So I'll be looking forward to that as we progress throughout the season and in toward the postseason.
Yeah, and I've had a number of talks with Freddie Rico, who was the Central Valley coach, national champion, national coach of the year, who's now our analyst on the girls' side, who works closely with you, Todd. We've talked about it in the past, you know, like, how good is the basketball in the state of Washington? And he's like, it's honestly, in the state of Washington, girls' basketball is as good as any other state in the country. When you look at the amount of talent individually, but also is team-wise that you see. And so, you know, the schools that you mentioned obviously are very good. I know Prairie down in Vancouver has typically been very good. Mount Spokane here in Spokane, they've lost a couple games, but, you know, in talking to David Pratt a little bit, he thinks they're going to be fine, you know, because they had such a good summer and fall leading up. But, you know, I know we cover Washington high school basketball, and we're biased to a certain extent, but I would stack up Washington over Oregon. I would stack up the best in Washington against some of the best in California, and many other states across the country.
Well, here's one, and this is relevant to this conversation that Todd and I were having with Scorebook Live's editor and VP of content, Ben Sherman. Shout out to Ben El Jefe. Haley Van Lith and Kashmir came down to Portland in the PIL tournament and put on an absolute show. I mean, they were beating 6A state championship favorites. She was, you know, this is a 1A team in Washington coming down and essentially obliterating the competition. And so that's, you know, speaks to exactly your point, Dan, is that, you know, obviously Haley Van Lith being an example of a player that you know, may be one of, if not the best to come out of the state when it's all said and done. But how that stacks up against other states, you know, we're seeing that again and again, especially here this holiday season.
And to piggyback on what Dan said, when I started at the Tacoma News Tribune in the mid-90s, what you heard about with girls basketball was Oregon City, Brad Smith. Look at some of the players that have come out of that program and gone on to major Division I programs. Lindsay Yamasaki, you know, Ashley Smith. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. And there wasn't a team in Washington that could hang within 20 points of Oregon City girls back in the 90s. I think the script is flipped. I think Washington girls basketball has become so good that if Washington hasn't, you know, at least even the score with a state like Oregon, you know, that in the 80s and 90s that really kind of controlled the West Coast, at the very least they've pulled even. If not, they've maybe pulled ahead. It's been fascinating to see, especially as Freddie has pointed out to you, Dan, in the last 5 years. My goodness, it's been almost on hyperspeed. It's been fantastic to watch just the evolution and the depth of really good basketball players in the state.
No question, and it's not too late to go back and listen to our podcast that dropped with Freddie Rico last week. It's in the podcast feed, Scorebook Live today, and it he breaks down with you, Todd, some of the top storylines across the state in the girls basketball landscape. So front of mind, go ahead and listen to that for, you know, a full breakdown. But we're going to move on from the Christmas tournament. It's a new year. It's a new decade. We're going to kind of talk about something that has been kicked around in other states to the point where states are trying to answer the talent parity question of why are these similar, you know, the same schools winning at the highest levels in state tournaments, in football, in basketball. Some states have adopted a model called the open division, open field tournament play that transcends classification. How would that work out in Washington? And do you guys think that something like that is scalable in a state like Washington when it works, you know, in areas like Los Angeles, in the southern section of California, in Arizona now, which is a new state to just recently have adopted it. So two-prong, is this something that would be viable in Washington? And Todd, in speaking with coaches across football, basketball, have you heard coaches be interested in this idea and really kicking it around?
Well, let's talk about the model first. And let's talk about the model that Arizona adopted in its first year this year. So the Arizona State High School Association adopted an 8-team open division championship for its football. So they basically crowned the State of Arizona high school champion out of its open division. And what they did is they used a point system. It's sort of an RPI system, but a lot like what Washington does with the RPI, not the same exact model, but very similar, you know, basing it on what teams have done in the regular season. And then the top eight teams at the end of the year have a chance to play in the open division state championship with a bye week in between the regular season and the start of the playoffs. Now, this was something that was brought to my attention from, you know, by longtime Ferndale football coach Jamie Plankovich, and said this is something I think the WIA should look at. I mean, why not? And what really kind of furthers this discussion is, you know, I think fans continue to be irked by the disparity of between private schools and public schools. It's a hot topic in the state. I think if you look at if you see the feedback from fans and you ask fans from public schools, you know, they're tired of seeing, you know, they're tired of seeing the O'Days and the Eastside Catholics. And I'm not saying how they got there, you know, how they built their team, et cetera, but they're tired of seeing the same teams have success over and over. Now, as Dan knows, you know, the tradition of those programs has a lot to do with it. But I think if you talk to some of the public schools and their fans, there's inherent advantages of being a private school. I think the talk of having a private school league, to me, it wouldn't be interesting to me. I don't want to see Lyndon Christian play O'Day in the boys basketball tournament. Nothing against Lyndon Christian. I just, you know, I want to see O'Day play teams of its caliber. I think this, especially at the football level, would be a really interesting idea to investigate to see how it would work. I would love to see Camas play an Eastside Catholic. I would love to see a Lake Stevens, a Graham Kapausen, a Bothell, a Woodinville play O'Day in an open division. Heck, I wouldn't mind seeing Tumwater play Eastside Catholic in an open division championship. And this is what this model would open the door for. You know, it seems like the feedback in Arizona has been positive from coaches and fans. It would be interesting to see how the WIA would put something like this together. And more importantly, would this help alleviate some of the tension between public school and private school coaches, administrators, players, and fans?
Yeah, I think it's something to look at. I think it would take a bit of time to implement anything as big as this. I think when you look at California, I don't know enough about the Arizona model to really talk about it, but the California model is something that's really easy or interesting because – you essentially have a couple teams. I don't want to say they're grandfathered in, but you kind of know who they are. They're going to be in the open division. It's your Modern Days. It's your St. John Boscos. It's your private schools that are kind of your powerhouses. But you can also earn your way up throughout the play of the course of the year to be able to play in the division or the open division, excuse me. And it would be one of those things that, you know, say, for example, you take Linden last year. I believe they had an incredible year and they were undefeated for a long, long time. They beat O'Day pretty handily early in the season. You know, what if you would have had the opportunity for Linden to compete in the not only the 2A state tournament, but then continue on in the playoffs in an open setting? So there you could have really established a true state champion at all classification levels. It would take a lot of research, a lot of diving in on how to do that, how to schedule it. Would there be certain teams that are quote-unquote grandfathered in due to their traditional historical success? Would it be kind of maybe on a 3 or 4 or 5 year kind of point system where you earn being in that? How many teams would be involved? You know, would you limit the amount of teams in a certain area, say in the Seattle-Tacoma area? How would teams handle travel from, say, the east side to be able to maybe play a west side team during an open tournament type game as opposed during the time where they're trying to schedule in, you know, their own classification level playoffs? So there's a lot of things that would have to be looked at, but I think it's worth looking at. I know Mick Hoffman, the new executive director of the WIA, is open to a lot of different things. He's open to many ideas, and so I'm sure it'll be tossed around. I don't know how seriously this would be considered and how to implement it, but I think it would be interesting for sure.
Yeah, no question. I called up before we recorded this Connor Morissette, Scorebook Live reporter down in California and LA, just asking him how it works and how well it works down there in the southern section, particularly in basketball, where for this open division tournament, they play a round robin in the first round. They split them up into two groups and play round robin. And then the two winners of each round robin, kind of like the World Cup, just advances and then plays in the championship. And he said, you know, the Southern Section Executive Board, you know, has the power, makes decisions. They consult coaches' polls and different things. And he said they do have a lot of power in choosing. They have all of it. But he said, you know, admittedly, it has been fair. And so you see how the Football Seating Committee has worked here in Washington and admittedly worked pretty well in its first 2 years. You know, that's a model that, you know, could be scaled to something like this as well. So certainly an interesting topic. Please reach out to us, drop a line individually, to us on Twitter at, SB Live WA, Scorebook Live Washington, on Twitter, on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. So thank you guys, Todd, Dan, for your time. Happy New Year. Subscribe to the Scorebook Live Today podcast. Anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Spotify, all the above. And catch us next week.